even tougher, she cheated on me at an event called Prom with Jesus.
So, oh, wow. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Was it with Jesus?
It wasn't with
Jesus.
Okay. No, it was with Carlos, but, you know. What's up, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the Luka Doncic hitting a game winner over Rudy Gobert to Luka Doncic very definitively informing Rudy Gobert that he cannot fucking guard him. It's Adam Amawala. Adam, how's it going?
Mother effer, you cannot effing guard me. And you know what? That has proven to be true.
It is, so far, a true statement, and the best part about that is they asked Luka about this after the game, and by they, I mean Tim McMahon, who is an ESPN reporter who, like, I don't know if he wants to be Skip Bayless, but I think he's, like, trying to be, like, the bad boy of the Mavs beat, and Luka hates him.
Yeah.
Because he always asks these clickbaity-type questions, and Luka got upset when this question began, and he said, I think he just, like, said, like, so he can't fucking guard you is, like, the question. And then Luka said, what? And then he said, you said that to Rudy. And then Luka said, I was speaking in Slovenian.
Oh, my gosh. Imagine wanting to be the Skip Bayless of anything.
It's something that I really try to not do with my content that I make as a podcaster. Because I remember, like, when I was coming up in YouTube, like, the thing was making rage videos. Mm-hmm. It was like, let me get so angry at a thing that it'll be funny. And I think that's kind of, like, molded now to be, like, righteous rage videos. Mm-hmm. Or, like, the new version of it is the, like, look how bad this obviously crappy thing is videos. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, an hour-long video essay that's, like, did you guys know that, you know, this very obviously bad thing is bad? It's like, yes, thank you for spending 60 minutes.
Well, I mean, as a comedian who has to play the algorithm game, the reels that tend to get the most traction are the ones where people are in the comments arguing with each other. And that's not really the kind of content that I put out, perhaps to my own detriment.
That's silly. But regardless, like, even the, like, rage, like, I'm so angry thing stuff, I think that, like, kind of bled into when I made Potterless, because I a little bit, like, I went into planning on dunking on the Harry Potter books.
Yeah.
And then now it's just like, you know what's fun? Making positive content and just talking about things that you like. And it's so much more enjoyable, I think, to create and also to listen to. So yeah, I can't imagine being like, you know who I'm going to be? A jerk. I'm going to be like kind of edgy. I just don't understand it. Yeah. I truly don't get it.
I do not get it either.
No, but you know what I do get? Basketball. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about basketball. And in order to get ready for basketball, let's talk about it in the Teal Memorial locker room, which in the past we've said has Dr. Teal's stuff in it. Mm-hmm. And you did send me a photo recently of you using a friend's bathroom and them having Dr. Teal stuff on display.
It's true. They must have known I was coming. And you know,
they were like,
Skip Bayless,
Adam's here can...
never allowed in the Teal Memorial locker room. Bam.
No.
Lifetime
ban. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Mm-mm-mm. So, you know who is allowed, though?
I mean, we roll out the red carpet for our patrons and especially our producer-level patrons.
Yes. Shout out to our producer-level patrons, especially Polly Burridge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris. How about them regular-ass Denver steamed nuggets?
Sorry, Lisa.
Sorry, Lisa. Anna Reed, Steph Curry doesn't eat Subway, and I'm tired of the propaganda.
Bang.
I agree. LeBron doesn't drive a Kia. Like,
no.
There's no way.
I feel like Shaq might drive a Buick just for the bit.
They're at least big enough that maybe, but yeah. Anyway, Nicole Shepard, Chase Underulo, Haley Zink, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a vampire, Chelsea's cousin, Ginger Spurs boy, Balls to the Walls, and Artie Party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, though, there is some sponsorship out there of people who actually do use the thing, and you want to know what we actually use?
What do we use?
We use Shaker and Spoon. We use it. We've used it in the past, and it's good. I've used it multiple times. I've also had friends use it, and then I was there, and it was fun. So Shaker and Spoon helps you make fun, fancy cocktails for not a lot of money and not a lot of effort, because all you got to do is buy the alcohol, and they do everything else. They send you a box with all of the ingredients to make the stuff. They send you the instructions, little recipe cards for how to make the stuff. They send you some cool, funky ingredients like syrups and spices and stuff like that, and then you can make really cool, funky drinks. It's usually three very different drinks that all use the same base liquor, which is fun. So if you're having people over to watch, I don't know, the NBA Finals or the WNBA season, go to shakerandspoon.com/horse. You'll get $20 off your first box. Most boxes are between $40 and $50. So that means you're getting like 50% off. Shakerandspoon.com/horse. Check it out. We've used it. It's great. You should use it. It's great.
I concur.
Mm-hmm. Now, unless you're listening on Patreon, where you get ad-free episodes, you're going to hear words from a few sponsors to make it feasible for us to do this thing and not be in the red. But once those ads are complete, we'll get back into this episode of Horse. Adam, we are back. What is the world of Mama Walla looking like?
Well, hopefully by the time you are listening to this, I will have met some of you in Austin, Houston, and San Antonio. I do believe I'll be hanging with Barb and Joel Saturday night. That is the Schuberts. So like Mike said on our last podcast, I mean, even if you don't want to come out for my comedy, come out for a Barb and Joel sighting.
Why not? They're great. They love saying hey to the people. They ran the merch table at one of my live shows once. And when they got recognized, I think they got bit a little bit by the star bug. They were like, ooh.
Hey, listen, I get it. Don't need no star bugs.
Ooh, thank you, Ludacris, on Justin Bieber's baby. Wow. Yeah.
I'm inspired by the fact, I'm sorry to blow up your spot, you do have a Bieber-esque hairdo right now because you don't have the flippy uppy.
Oh, yeah. No, I've not gotten a haircut since like maybe a month or two before having the kid. It was like I timed the haircut to where whenever I needed to be seen last for something, it looked good. And maybe that was like my last live show or something. And then I told my barber, I was like, I'll see you in early July / late June, because that's the next time I need to be.
Meanwhile, I got a haircut 2 hours ago.
Nice. It looks clean and crisp.
Thank you.
And
thank
I'm
you,
envious.
Thank
yeah,
you.
That looks nice. We might be doing a Kelly give me a haircut in the bathtub, but we need baby to sleep in a particular time of the day.
Or maybe you can pretend you're the baby and she can cut your hair while you're asleep and we can see if you don't wake up.
Ooh, interesting.
That could be fun. Yeah.
That could be very interesting.
So, also, our patron, Matthew, is that Ginger Spurs Boy? Is that one and the same? So I will be meeting Ginger Spurs Boy, theoretically, for the first time in my life on Sunday in San Antonio.
I also think you're
going to
be meeting Artie Party at one of the Austin shows.
Yes.
Because I specifically sent out Artie Party's horse jersey because they wanted to wear it at the show. And I was like, I got to make sure I send it. So hopefully it arrives in time.
I love that. So anyway, hopefully I have met some of you in Texas. The other things I have coming up as you're listening to this, this coming Saturday, which is Saturday, June 8th, I will be headlining Fairfield Comedy Circle. That is in Fairfield, Connecticut. I'm also going to be headlining the Vermont Comedy Club. That is on Sunday, August 11th. And then I'm going to be booking out the rest of the year pretty soon. But that's the main stuff I have going on for now. Oh, this is a newish one. I will be headlining the Dry Heat Comedy Club. That is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, because I have a college gig out there, and so I was able to set up a show, and that is going to be on Thursday, September 26th. So
fun. That's a great name for a comedy club.
It is pretty good. Yeah. It's a dry heat. It's a dry
it's
heat.
A dry heat. It's a dry heat.
That's what I got. What do you have coming up?
It's all the same stuff. So I've got those Pacific Northwest shows, Seattle. I'll be in Portland for LeakyCon, then Vancouver, BC, not Vancouver, Washington. Sorry, Vancouver, Washington. You can come to the Seattle show. And then I will be in Berkeley, California, also Pacific Northwest-ish area. And then I've also got Nashville and Atlanta. And then I have things that have not been announced yet, but will be coming. So that includes New Orleans in late October and DC in, I think, September, and then Philly and Toronto in November. So just head on over to schub.es/tour to see what's up there.
Cool.
Now I think we can get into MB Q&A. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. Do you want to share it? You sourced it. We got a fun DM on Instagram. And I will say the easiest way to get a Q in NBQ&A is to send us an email at horsehoopspod@gmail.com. But we do try to check our DMs when we're able to. And sometimes we find some gems like this one.
Oh, yeah. This was a good one. So shout out to Arthur, who sent in this question, Arthur says, "Hey, Adam and Mike, quick MB Q&A. What's the most random jersey y'all have ever seen in the wild? I just saw a Pau Gasol Bulls jersey in a barbershop, and that got me thinking about what makes people buy jerseys of good players on random teams." So I do think it's particularly funny. This guy buying this jersey, I think, is a bit strange because you would even know as a Bulls fan. But I feel like when Pau was on the Bulls, it was like, okay, this won't be more than 3 years. Like, it's right. Just a very specific, like, he's very old. And it's end of the career kind of thing. But people still do buy those jerseys. I think it's funnier when people buy a jersey for someone and it's like, well, this guy's going to be on the team forever. And then like something weird happens. Like if you had, I'm trying to think of like someone who was
never buy a James Harden jersey.
Yeah,
exactly.
I was going to say the James Harden Nets jersey feels like a funny one where it's like, how could you have seen that one coming? Like at least KD and Kyrie were on the team long enough where that wouldn't be weird. But I don't know.
Now, do you do the thing? I play a game with myself because you see a lot of people in jerseys in New York. And if it doesn't have the number on the front, sometimes I play this game where I'm like, what name is going to be on the back of that jersey?
That's
and I did that
fun.
Recently with someone had a Brooklyn Nets jersey. And in my mind, I was like, I'm sure it's like KD or Kyrie or someone like prominent who's been there. Cam Thomas.
Well,
not that he's not a good player. Just like I wasn't expecting that.
He's a true fan or a new fan. One of the two.
Or related to Cam Thomas.
Yeah. Yeah, that's his brother,
Sam Thomas.
There it is. I was like, what's a man's name?
I like your first idea was Jam.
Jam. Yeah, he loves basketball, you know?
Sure.
Jam Thomas. But I don't know if I have a weird one like that, mainly because I haven't been to a music festival in a while. That's not true. I went to Lollapalooza.
That's true. That's where weird jerseys live. But it's usually like dudes in Larry Bird jerseys who want to hear Lil Dicky.
Sure. But I think the weirdest thing I've seen was when I was traveling in Australia, there was a guy wearing just a weird combination of like, I want to say it was a Boston Celtics hat, a Chicago Bulls shirt, and a Los Angeles Lakers pair of shorts. And I think it's just a thing over in Australia. I would kind of get it where it's just like, I like the NBA. And I guess it's kind of like in America, you'll have people who just like enjoy watching the Premier League of soccer without like super dedicating to a team. There's obviously people who do dedicate to a team. But I also know some people who are just like, I get up on Saturday mornings and I just watch all the Premier League games. So I think just because basketball is a little more rare over there. But shout out to the Tasmania Jumpin' Jacks who won their first championship in the Australian Basketball League, the NBL, whatever it is, they're like a newer team and they won the championship, which is cool. And they got a great team branding and everything. But that was just the weirdest thing of like, how could you wear stuff from like the three most like dynasty? Like he needed Spurs socks to really hit all four of like, I just like the teams that have been historically very good. And this is what I root for. And that was that. So I think that's the most bizarre thing I've seen.
Yeah. I recently texted you because I saw a Knicks Iman Shumpert jersey. So Shumpert was, he was on the Cavs team that won the championship, I believe, but he was also part of the Knicks team that had like Carmelo Anthony and Jeremy Lin and Landry Fields and all those guys. Like he was a pretty good player. It's just like not a jersey you would expect to see anymore. I've got a second part to this question. What is the most obscure jersey you have ever owned? Because I have an answer to that.
Ooh. I don't buy too many jerseys just because, like, how often do you wear a jersey? And they're, like, $100 now.
Right.
I think the most obscure one, though, would probably be I had, and it was a fake one. Like, I got it from a knockoff website, so it cost me, like, $35. I have a Tim Hardaway Jr. Knicks jersey from the first time he was on the Knicks. So when he was first on the Knicks and he was number 5, not the second time he was on the Knicks and he was number 3. So I had it because it was one of those things where I had been a big enough Knicks fan and I was like, I want to get a jersey. Like, and I was close to getting a Jeremy Lin jersey. I got a Jeremy Lin jersey and then I was like, I'm going to wait until we re-sign him and then I'll get the jersey. And then we didn't re-sign him.
Smart.
So when Tim Hardaway Jr. was like good and young and playing well, I was like, oh, this guy will be on the team forever. Let me just get it. Like, there's no way we don't keep him on the team. And then we traded him. So I think I've
sworn off buying new player jerseys because I've been burned so many times. And then the funny thing is you think to yourself like, oh, I'll buy like a classic player's jersey because it'll never you know, get old. But now I feel like you have to be worried about some horrible details about their life coming out. Like, you know, so it, you really can't win. At a certain point, you should just buy, like, the team jersey and nothing else.
Yeah. The thing is, they now do, at least some places do the, like, jersey insurance or whatever.
I love that.
Where, like, if a player gets traded, I don't know what the time window is. But yeah, that Hardaway one is the most obscure. What's funny is that, like, it became useful again when he was back on the team. I was like, oh, and now I look like a real fan because I have his old jersey. And then Quickly was on the team and he was number 5. And I was like, cool, this is fine. Like, I just put duct tape over the back and wrote Quickly. And then we traded Quickly. And it's like, I don't know if I'm going to use this as a Precious Achiuwa thing. And I donated the jersey to charity.
Well, for inquiring minds, the most obscure jersey I have ever owned is a Chicago Bulls Marcus Fizer jersey. Marcus Fizer. Have you ever heard of that person?
Yes, but like I didn't know you could buy his jersey.
He was the 4th pick of the 2000 NBA draft, so he was fairly highly touted. He was a very good college player at Iowa State. He did not pan out at all in the NBA. He also had like an ACL injury. On his Wikipedia page, he has played for like 15 teams in the world. So he's played for the Bulls and Bucks. He only lasted like 5 years in the NBA, which I guess isn't bad. But he's been like quite literally all over the globe, from like the Middle East to, you know, teams in Mexico to like just anywhere in the world you can imagine Marcus Fizer has gone. So that is the most obscure jersey I have ever owned. And yeah, thank you for the great question. And by all means, feel free to tweet at us or email us any obscure jerseys that you see, even if you want to take a photo of someone. I feel like it's better to take a photo like of the back of the jersey so you're not taking photos of random people's faces, but you get the idea.
What basketball should do to get a baseball reference, and they should do what the Yankees do, which is you have jerseys with no names on the backs, and then you can just buy one jersey and then it's forever. Like, I've had a 25 Yankees jersey that my aunt got for me when I was like 12, and she got me a youth extra large, which was like super enormous on me, and now is like a tight fit adult small on me. But it's been Mark Teixeira, and now it's Gleyber Torres. Like, it's got
Jason Giambi.
Right, yeah, it's got a good run through it. That's the nice thing about Yankees fandom, is you can just kind of buy one jersey and be like, yeah, I do love Tino Martinez and Robinson Cano and Gary Sanchez.
There you go.
So with that complete, we can get into Full Court Press. Get it like the news. Obviously, the NBA Finals are about to begin. We're recording this on May 29th. The Bulls are on May 29th.
We're keeping that in. Kensei, our beloved editor, we're keeping that in because you just manifested the Bulls getting to the finals at some point in my life again. And that was my favorite misspeak, maybe of the history of this podcast. So thank you for
that. Pretty good. You're welcome. You're welcome. Also, how privileged of you to say the word again.
Fair.
I've never.
Fair.
I guess, no, the Knicks haven't made it my lifetime. It was just,
it has been 26 years. That's not a short amount of time. I just want to say that.
Sure. And for me, it's been 24 and it will be 25.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, oh my goodness. But the Boston Celtics are in the NBA Finals. They swept the Pacers. Shout out to Tyrese Halliburton, who in the press game conference afterwards said, oh, if I've learned anything in the NBA playoffs, it's that the healthier team usually wins. And he was saying this because he got kind of injured towards the end of the series after they already went down 2-0, where he was perfectly healthy, to a team that was also missing one of their starters in Kristaps Porzingis. Like, you guys got swept. It's not like it was close. But I will say,
before you continue, it was close. It's as close as a sweep could be. And I mentioned this because my friend, comedian Tom Takkar, who I believe we've had on the pod when we did Pistons Pacers brawl episode, shared a tweet that was fascinating. This is from the Sporting News that says the Pacers had at least a 90% win probability in the fourth quarter during games 1, games 3, and games 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals. And then there's a follow-up tweet that says the odds of the Celtics winning all three of those games is 0.056%. That's a 1 in almost 2,000 chance of winning all three of those games. So obviously a sweep is a sweep, but it was within the games. Three of the four were incredibly close.
Yeah. I've never been a big win probability stat fan because it doesn't factor in when one team is way better than the other team.
It's what do you just mean by like, that?
because the percentages aren't like, they don't factor in how good the team is. They just factor in like what the score is and how much time is left. So this will happen in baseball all the time too. It's like, oh wow, the Yankees scored like 9 runs in the 9th inning and their win probability was like 0. It's like, yeah, but the Yankees are good and the Marlins suck. So like there was a much higher chance of scoring 9 runs against the fucking Marlins. Sure. Like, yeah. So I get it, but yeah, it was super rare. I did see a Shea Serrano tweet that was like, see, the key is the Pacers just need to play 45-minute games instead of 48-minute games. But Halliburton making this comment is absurd because the Bucks were heavily injured. Giannis didn't play. Dame missed out some of the games. I don't even know if Middleton played every game. And then the Knicks, like every single player was hurt by the end of game 7. Like,
the Knicks were about to ask you to play.
That yet, like, Shake Milton played minutes. Like, it was dire. It was just everybody was hurt. So for him to say that is like, you've kind of proven your own point, sir. Thank you for saying that. But anyway, Celtics are in. And the other side, we've got a 3-1 lead going for the Mavs. It was looking like they might pull off the sweep, but the Wolves fought it off. We'll see where that series ends up. But that's where we're currently at, playoff wise. But I think there's enough other stuff going on that we can kind of just talk about the non-playoff thing, and we can save basketball talk for when it's like the finals. And we'll talk about it on Patreon, as we always do, where we'll do little recaps after each finals game, where we'll be more basketball-y. But this podcast is only remotely about basketball. So let's talk about the semi-basketball things. Let's get the sad one out of the way. Bill Walton passed away at the age of 71, which is really sad because he's nice and fun and a good commentator. I had no idea that he was sick. And 71 is just like too young, way too young.
Yeah. And it's interesting. The interview that you're going to hear in just a few minutes centers around Ernie Johnson, who's also a basketball broadcaster and a notoriously lovely man, as you're going to hear. And Bill Walton had very much the same reputation. And there were so many stories coming out the past few days of things that he did for people and just his kind of love for life, really. And I don't know if they've said specifically, I didn't know he was ill, and it doesn't seem like a lot of people did. It almost feels like a Chadwick Boseman thing where like he probably just like wanted to be more private. But yeah, it's really sad. He obviously incredible player. Probably his peak as a player was for the Trailblazers, and I'm sure our pal Ian Carmel could tell you more about Bill Walton. But he was also part of championship teams with the Boston Celtics. Rick Carlisle, who's the coach of the Pacers, played with Walton when he was on the Celtics, shared a story of how he attributes Bill Walton to like helping him meet his wife, because Bill Walton like snuck him into a Grateful Dead concert. All these just amazing stories. And also one of the most flowery commentators ever. And we'll share some clips. My favorite one is where he refers to the Spurs' Boris Diaw as, quote, a classical human being, which doesn't even really mean anything, but it's just, it's great.
It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. So rest in peace and nothing but the best to Bill Walton's family. Very sad to see that news. Now, on the other side of things, there's a lot of LeBron buzz going on right now, because LeBron is famously not in the playoffs, so we have to talk about lots of other things so that we end up getting distracted by the fact that LeBron lost in the first round. there's a couple of things going on. First, the Lakers did fire Darvin Ham. He has been cooked. And
the ham has been cooked.
The ham is cooked. And now they're trying to bring in a new coach. And there's rumors and rumblings and, like, I don't know the validity of them, and I'm very intrigued to see what happens, but there's at least some smoke out there that LeBron would like to have J.J. Redick as the coach. Ooh. Now, J.J. Redick, I'm one of the biggest J.J. Redick fans out there. I love the guy. I've followed his entire career. I listen to all of his podcasts and watch all the stuff. I'm a huge fan. The only coaching he's done is for his son's basketball team. His son is 8 years old, and even though on J.J. Redick's new podcast with LeBron, they do all the X's and O's and they got whiteboard stuff, and like, he clearly knows his stuff. I don't know that coaching the Lakers is like the first job. Like, it's so rare to see someone with zero coaching experience go into a new coaching experience and do well. We've seen Jason Kidd do very badly when he tried to coach the Nets. We saw Steve Nash do very badly when he tried to coach the Nets.
Maybe it's a Nets thing. Because, I mean, like, Steve Kerr, I'm pretty sure his first head coaching job was the Warriors. But he also inherited an amazing team.
Yes. And the difference with Steve Kerr is that he was a front office person for the Suns. He was a commentator for a little bit. He was the GM of the Suns for a couple of years. So at least he had like front office experience. JJ Redick, yes, has been on ESPN broadcast and like is clearly a very smart player and knows what he's doing. But like just the lack of coaching experience worries me. And it's not just like a regular coaching job. Even the Warriors, like when Kerr joined the Warriors, they weren't the Warriors. They were the Warriors. Right. Like they were a good team on the rise that needed to go over the edge. The Lakers is ultimately like a, if we don't do very well, you're going to get fired and all that. And you know what? Maybe that's just the play from JJ. You get a 4-year, $40 million contract. You get fired after 1 year. Like, it's a great way to make $40 million and only have to do 1 year of work. Maybe
I just feel like if calculus. I'm JJ Redick, like, I've created such a dope life for myself. Why add this unnecessary stress? I wouldn't even want it.
That's the thing. Is the stress worth the money? How much money is he making from his media staff?
Gotta be pretty good.
It's got to be pretty good. So I don't know. So that's out there. I get it from LeBron's perspective of just wanting to have like a bud be the coach. Because
Lakers start out 10-20, maybe they won't be such good buds anymore.
So I don't know. It's hard. It's especially hard just because like always the question when you have a LeBron team is like, what's the dynamic? Like, does he respect the coach? And like clearly in this situation, LeBron has more of the power dynamic over JJ Redick.
Of course. Like, he should just be player coach. Let's just stop the charade.
Right. So we'll see about that. Now, other LeBron things. Rich Paul has been on a wild one. Rich Paul is LeBron's agent and CEO of Clutch Sports, which he always makes sure is in the Shams and Woj tweets when there's stuff about Clutch. He has had two wild things happen because he's doing interviews now, I guess. Good for you, Rich. Dating Adele wasn't enough. You got to get like more of the PR out there. But he first said stuff about LeBron. He let it slip on the TNT Altcast, which I don't recommend watching. I would recommend watching the real cast, but the Altcast had players and other people like get interviewed on, and Rich Paul was there, and he let it slip that LeBron James is going to decline his player option and be a free agent. So a player option is basically an optional contract thing where it's like, hey, we'll sign you for 3 years with a player option for the fourth year. And you can decide, do you want to take that fourth year or do you want to decline it and try to get a new contract? Usually players accept it when they play poorly over the first couple of years. And then it's like, ha ha ha, I will get paid $20 million a year. Thank you very much. But in LeBron's case, he's probably going to decline it so he can try to get a new deal, maybe join a new team. And Rich Paul let it slip that that is what LeBron is going to do. So very interesting. I still don't think it's huge.
I don't see him leaving LeBron, the Lakers, though.
I don't either, but it does open the Bronny James thing. But also, this is what LeBron does very often when he has these player options. Like, he'll usually sign these, like, very short deals and then almost always decline the player option, even if he doesn't plan on leaving the team. So I don't think it's a huge news thing. I just think it's funny that Rich Paul leaked it on live television by accident. And speaking of the Bronny James thing, that was the other Rich Paul quote where Bronny James, LeBron's son, didn't play very well in his freshman year at USC, but is still entering the NBA draft. And the deadline has passed, so like he's going in the NBA draft.
Apparently had a very good combine, supposedly.
Sure, but so did Yi Jan Lin.
Now that would be an obscure jersey.
That would be a wild. Yeah, Yi Jan Lin Bucks jersey, it'd be great. but Rich Paul was asked about this because people are saying like, oh, is it fair that Bronny James is getting this attention because he's not actually that good, or at least didn't prove to be that good, but people are thinking about taking him in the draft at all or in the late first round because there's always the chance that LeBron would join their team. And Rich Paul basically was like, look, people are going to call it nepotism, but like, look at America. There's nepotism all around. James Dolan, he owns the Knicks, but he only has it because of his dad. So Rich Paul defends nepotism, but I get it because he is the result of nepotism. He was LeBron's friend and then LeBron's agent, and he built up his entire agency just because it was the agency where LeBron was. And like, I'm not trying to discredit any work that he's done. I'm sure he's done like some hard work now, but I will say when you are the agent for someone as good as LeBron, specifically in the NBA, your job is super easy because all you do is go into meetings and go, hello, we'd like the max money, please, and the max years and the max flexibility. And then the teams go, yes. And then they go, thank you. And that's all you do. And then you get a cut of that check.
And again, I'm sure he's very good at his job. There are plenty of people who get opportunities via nepotism and suck at them or blow those opportunities and then they're gone within 6 months. Right. But yeah, it's a funny thing to be like, oh, you think it's wrong? Well, wrong things are happening everywhere, and that's okay.
Right. Yeah, like, this bad thing is okay because America has been founded on this bad thing. It's like, America was founded on slavery? Like, yeah. I don't understand.
Well, listen, why in 20 years, when your child has a hit podcast called The Newer Olympian,
oh God,
I expect you to defend your position.
Look, if they get it and they earn it, cool. But no, I'm not, you know, podcasting
no free clout.
Famously rife with nepotism.
Oh, yeah.
But no, it's just like, it's just weird to use that as the justification of like a bad thing happening. It's like, well, America, right, who does a lot of bad stuff, does this bad thing. So like, why are you guys mad?
Yeah. Now, the even wilder part is that not only is Bronny getting all this attention, but there are reports, I'm not sure how substantiated they are, but they seem legitimate, that he only wants to play for either the Lakers or the Suns. And I'm sorry, yeah, when you average 3 points as a freshman, you don't get to make demands.
Right. It's bad. And you think Adam's exaggerating. He's not. Like, I think his average was either like 3 or 5 points a game. Like, not very good. For a team that wasn't very good, it's not like he was getting benched because he was on a really good team. Like, USC was not good. So he could have got minutes if he was good. But yeah, I mean, it's a weird thing because apparently, according to some reports, he turned down 10 workout opportunities, which is wild. But it seems only likely like the Lakers and the Suns might be the ones to actually draft him to try to do the like, hey, LeBron might come here move. I don't know. It's weird. I don't get why you don't just take them all like and then turn them down. Like, I can understand a star player doing this, but like, dude, just say yes to all of them. Why? Like, what else are you doing? That, when people turn down the workouts, that's what I'm like, what else you got going on? Go there. Get. They're going to treat you nice. You're going to get free swag. You get to like play basketball in front of people. Like, go for it, man. It's like in other cases, they don't do it because it hurts their draft stock. But like, your draft stock is just at this point, my dad is LeBron. So like, why not just go to all of them, man? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't have any answers for you.
Nope. But that has been Full Court Press. Oh, other quickly, and once the NBA playoffs are over, we'll dive deeper into WNBA. But there are some fun things going on in WNBA. I'm having fun with my Bad on Purpose Fantasy Basketball League that some horse listeners are in, which is a good time. But the league has been good. My Storm are finally figuring it out. They recently beat the Chicago Sky, so the Storm have won the Horse Boys Bowl round one. And there's some fun things happening with like the Sun are undefeated, the Dream are winless.
Undefeated, some are calling it.
Undefeated. Thank you very much. So the WNBA's got some fun stuff going on. And like, check your different internet ways to watch them for free, because like, they have free games on Twitter. There's been games on Amazon Prime. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch games. Like,
there's also been way more games on ESPN, and I love that.
Yes. So there's been a greater opportunity to watch the WNBA without like have WNBA League Pass, which is only like $20 or $30.
Right.
And like, I do the thing, once the NBA season is over, then I get WNBA League Pass. Mm-hmm. And I want to say I did this last year and it was like $15 or $10.
Right. Oh yeah, so the full season I think is $35. So if you do it halfway through, it's like,
so if you do it partway through, they definitely do it like after All-Star break, it's $10 deal.
Right.
So check that out.
But two other notes. I don't know if we talked about this. Toronto is officially going to be the next city to get a WNBA team, so that's going to be really fun. And by the next time we record, the legend, Deb Mamawala, will have attended her first WNBA game.
Are you going to a game with her?
Mm-hmm. So it'll be Sunday, June 9th. It is a Liberty game versus, I want to say, the Mystics? I could be wrong about that, but I know it's
they're quite bad,
game.
So that
Either
should
way.
Be a blowout for the Libs.
But yeah, it's my, the Libs. That's a very funny, unintentional nickname. So yeah, I'm going with my mom and dad and Celia. We're going to check out a WNBA game, and I'm sure I'll report back on how it was.
Yes, please. That would be fun. Cool. Well, to close out this episode, we are going to have an interview with a lovely person, Ben Kaplan, who told a wonderful story on Twitter that went kind of viral about how
it went really viral.
Yeah, and how Ernie Johnson and everyone at TNT was/is, and it's a fun chat. I think you'll enjoy it.
Alrighty, as promised, we have a very special guest for our interview today, a man who recently went viral on NBA Twitter for good reasons, which is not always why people go viral on NBA Twitter. He's also an author and the co-author of Pipeline to the Pros, a book about basketball that's sweeping the basketball world by storm from what some reports I've heard. We've got Ben Kaplan in the house. Ben Kaplan, Ben, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure to have you. Now, just to paint the picture for those of you who are listening, we may not even post any video clips of this. We're really more of an audio show. But I came on the pod wearing a 1992 Bulls NBA Finals shirt. Ben immediately was like, give me a second. I'll be right back. Went and put on his 1991 NBA Finals shirt. Ben, I feel like you and I are kind of kindred spirits here. We're basically the same age. I grew up in Aurora, which is, as you know, a suburb of Chicago, a big Chicago sports guy. So I already feel like we have a bond. Mike is a Knicks fan, but we'll forgive him for that.
Right. So I hate both of you and your team and Michael Jordan. And
sorry for ruining your childhood.
It's okay. I was like a little too young. So I was just, you know, as I came of age, it was like, oh, that guy who was good beat my team all the time. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Now, so you grew up, did you grow up in the Chicago area?
I did. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So yeah, I guess before we get into your kind of viral moment with an amazing story about Ernie Johnson, I'd love to know a little bit about your background in sports, your background with basketball specifically in terms of, you know, did you play? Were you super interested in it? Like what gets you from childhood to here in terms of your love of basketball?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, so I was born in 87. So the Bulls, this 92. One Bulls championship shirt was my dad's. It was not mine. It was passed down. But, you know, just the Bulls being good was part of life. And everybody was really into basketball that grew up around here because of them. So I just loved it. It was such a fun sport to play. And I think, like, I have an older sister. She's 10 and a half years older than me. Mm-hmm. So I was in some ways kind of an only child. And basketball is just like the perfect sport to play when you're, you know, playing by yourself. So it started when I was like 5 or 6, and I would have the little Tykes hoop and was doing, you know, full 82 game seasons for the Bulls and memorizing rosters and doing the play by play and like doing the like, mom, time me for 5 minutes sort of thing. and then, you know, kept playing and just loved it. And that was like, you know, summers, friends would go to like sleepaway camps. I would just want to do basketball camps. And it never really slowed down for me. I just kept loving it, kept practicing, kept playing. And I mean, it still continues to this day. I feel like I like basketball and playing basketball and watching basketball more than an average dad in their late 30s should. But it's just my favorite.
No, there's nothing better than that. I remember that as a kid when I would do basketball camps. Those days were like, you get up at 7 a.m, you go to basketball camp, you play all day, you get home, you just immediately start playing a pickup game with other people, then maybe have a game at night. And somehow when you're that old, you can do that with impunity. Now, like I stretched before this interview. Like I just can't do it anymore. But I think also it's kind of funny because in a baseball sense, and we have a running joke that we always make baseball reference on this basketball podcast, but Mike grew up a Yankees fan and was of that same age as like you and I watching the Bulls, where like you just think that this is what life is. And then when they don't win every single year, you're like, well, this isn't right. This doesn't seem fair.
The first time the Yankees didn't get to the World Series, I was confused. It was weird in 2001 when we lost the World Series. I was like, okay, like I understand that you can lose, sure. But then I very distinctly remember when I think in 2002 we lost to the Angels in the ALDS or the ALCS. Mm-hmm. And my dad told me, and I was at someone's birthday party. And I was like, no. Like,
there must have been some sort of clerical error.
But like, yeah, we always get there. Like, we don't lose before the World Series. Doesn't make any sense. So I totally get it.
Yeah. And growing up in Chicago, there's like the complete flip of that where it's like, no, the Cubs are never supposed to be good. They're always supposed to have something bad happen. And then when they did win the World Series, even though I wasn't a child, it was still the same like childlike confusion about how they could win and what this meant for the world and like if dogs and cats were going to be getting along and things like that.
Right. And with the Bulls, I guess when they had the years where they didn't win, it was always preceded by a very dramatic Michael Jordan based thing. It wasn't like the Yankees just like naturally not winning. This was, oh, Michael Jordan has retired. And then, oh, Michael Jordan has retired again. Yeah. And then, you know, the three-peats are ending.
Yeah. I don't remember much about like watching the games, but I definitely remember like just the feeling of inevitability. There was never any doubt that they were going to win. It was never like, oh, I should watch this. Oh, the Jazz might get him. And like during the pandemic, you know, when they had the Last Dance, and then in Chicago, they re-aired like all of the playoff games. So I like binge watched them like it was a TV show. And watching those games, I was like, these were closer than I remember. Like there seems like there's some drama here. Like this could have gone either way. But in the moment, as like whatever, a 10 or 11 year old, was like, no, the Bulls are going to win. Jordan will win. That's just how this works.
One of the biggest times I got in trouble as a kid, who was generally pretty good, was breaking a remote control on one of the 10 Bulls losses in the 95-96 season. They lost they lost to the Nuggets in Denver, who was it was a really bad team.
Bad. Yeah. They were really bad.
And when they lost, I chucked the remote. I tried to throw it into the couch, but I missed and hit the wall, and that was. I was reprimanded, rightfully so.
I did that once with a cell phone when a high school girlfriend broke up with me. I tried to throw it into a chair in my room, like a cushy, like reading chair kind of thing. And I threw it a little too high and it like skipped off the top of it like it was a skipping stone, and it just wedged into the drywall.
I was picturing a flip phone that like broke in two pieces, because that was always a
fun
element
of those
days.
It was a flip phone, but it was close. I did the cool thing where you know, close the phone without using your hand and then tried to chuck it, because I had just found out she cheated on me, and that's why we were breaking up.
That's tough.
Mm-hmm. And even tougher, she cheated on me at an event called Prom with Jesus.
So, oh wow. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Was it
wasn't with Jesus? Okay. No, it was with Carlos, but you know.
Oh my god. So now, to what degree, Ben, would you say that, because obviously your dad kind of becomes a central figure in this story with Ernie Johnson, to what degree was your love of sports part of your relationship with your dad and mom and like other people in your family?
Yeah. So I have three boys, and if they end up liking basketball at any degree that I like basketball, their story is going to be, well, my dad liked basketball. Mm-hmm. And even though he didn't force us to like basketball, it just became a thing because like we were doing
osmosis.
Exactly. I hope it's that gentle. And then with my dad, it was kind of the opposite, where he was into basketball. He liked basketball. He actually had Bulls season tickets in like the early 80s, and he got rid of them in 1983 because he was like, this is stupid.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing timing.
For context for anyone listening, Michael Jordan was drafted in 1984, hence our reaction to that.
Yeah. So he got rid of them the year before they drafted the best basketball player ever. And then we were on the wait list for a while, and then we got season tickets in 1999, the year Michael Jordan retired. So So we watched a lot of very bad basketball in the early 2000s when the Bulls immediately became one of the worst teams in the league.
We did that. A lot of Khalid El-Amin performances.
Yes, a lot of Khalid El-Amin. So when you're a season ticket holder, you get like a box of stuff at the end of the season, all the giveaways. So you like don't need to be there early to get the giveaways. You just get a box of all the giveaways. So I have, it's at my mom's house, but we have all these Bulls bobbleheads from like a 10-year period. And some of the players are like just so anonymous. And there is, I'm pretty sure there's a Khalid El-Amin bobblehead somewhere in our house, which is just not exactly lighting up eBay. But it was more of like him recognizing my love and then bonding with it, bonding with me through that. It was definitely like the thing we talked about forever.
I have pulled up Khalid El-Amin's basketball reference page. Only one season, 50 games. Shot 33% from three, though.
Did he really only play one season?
He played one season for the Bulls. He played 50 games, started 14 of them, averaged 19 minutes a game on 37% shooting. But he did shoot 33% from three, but unfortunately 38% from two.
Is that... He might, like, the proportion of games started for how few he played must be that's crazy. Just how bad that team was.
Hilarious. All right,
I also didn't know that about the promos. That makes sense of how like I'll see at certain things like the bobblehead on sale before the event starts, like that's cool good to know.
All right. So that's kind of a perfect segue into talking about the tweet that you had, series of tweets that went incredibly viral recently. I have it pulled up. I think as of this recording, that first tweet of the thread has like 7 million views or something like that. So the story centers around your bar mitzvah. And I had a chance to listen to that interview that you did, that Ernie Johnson was a part of. I think it's called The Franchise, where you talk about the story. So it centers around your bar mitzvah, which I assume was when you were, you know, 13 years old, and something special that your dad did for you, knowing your love of basketball. So if you don't mind recounting it, walk us through how this all comes to be.
Sure. So one of the things that my dad thought would be really cool was if he got like local sportscasters to just leave a message on his voicemail and then compile them all together and then, you know, have a bunch of these local figures saying, oh, congratulations, Ben, I'm proud of you, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Kind of like Cameo way before Cameo and free.
Sure.
And yeah. He was getting a lot of yeses. So he figured, hey, I'll call up Turner Studios and see if maybe Ernie Johnson would do this. Like, wouldn't that be amazing? He's got the voice of like these NBA playoffs. And Ernie called him back directly and said, like, yeah, we're sitting around the studio, we'll whip something up. And I like, it wasn't like, oh, we'll do a video. It was just like, yeah, we'll do something. And I don't know exactly what the time period was, but some period of time passes, not a very long period. And my dad's sitting in his office and he gets the mail and there's a shipment, a box from Turner, and inside is a VHS. And on the cover of the VHS, it says the Ben Kaplan Halftime Report. And he just, I think, immediately was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to do any work the rest of the day. I have to immediately drive home and pop this in the VHS and see what this is.
Amazing. So you're not privy to any of this at the time, obviously, right? You don't become aware of this until your actual bar mitzvah.
Right. So at a bar mitzvah, for people who are not Jewish or not Jewish adjacent and haven't been to a million bar mitzvahs like I did, there's a rhythm to these sorts of things. And there's like, you know, first of all, there's the service and the religious part. We can skip all that. You get to the party afterwards and, you know, usually there's like, you know, there might be a hype crew or something that's like leading the kids through dances.
Oh,
and games.
The hype crews were always great. I'm not Jewish, but I grew up in New Jersey, so I went to a million. Yeah. And you gotta love the dance team that's there.
And as of about 2009, a photo montage with the music in the background of "I Got a Feeling That Tonight's Gonna Be Ubiquitous."
We got like kind of an off-brand dance crew. There was like one guy that was the guy in the northern Chicago suburbs. His name was Mars. If you got Mars, that was like a big deal. Mars booked out like years in advance. And then I had like some off-brand one that nobody else had. And
you had Neptune.
Pluto. Vividly remember them being like, so this was the year 2000, and they were like, so like, what kind of music do you want? We can, you know, cater the soundtrack to that. And I was like, and they were like, do you like Smash Mouth? And I was like, no, not really. And then like the first song they played was Smash Mouth. And I was like, they didn't listen to me. But anyway, so there's the dancing and there's like meals and there's, you know, you sit down, you have your food. It's usually a buffet or whatever it might be. And then they always wheel out the giant projection screen. And then that's going to be a montage of like the kid. The parents spend way too much time picking out all the different pictures from their first 13 years. So when they wheeled out the projection screen, I was like, okay, it's montage time. And instead of me, it was the TNT NBA halftime guys. I was like, what in the world is going on?
And we welcome you to the AT&T Halftime Report here in our Atlanta studio. Peter Vesey, Kenny Smith, Ernie Johnson, the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, George Karl. It's certainly one of the big stories on this playoff night. It has nothing to do with what's going on the court, but the fact that 13-year-old Ben Kaplan has announced he is going to forego, geez, the rest of high school and just jump right into the NBA. He will be the youngest player to ever attempt this. And George, I know you've scouted this kid, and you've made it a policy not to scout the younger guys, but you had to make an exception here.
This is one of the few players, in my mind, is probably, you know, he's probably be too young from a standpoint of maturity and age and sociological makeup. But talent-wise, he's some guy that's going to be like Kobe Bryant, he's going to be like Kevin Garnett. He's going to come in the league, it'll take him a year or two, and he'll be a great player.
Is this a guy you would like to have on your team?
I'd love to have him. I think he's a player that we would play probably immediately some minutes early and could help us probably in a year or two.
Does he have the toughness you're looking for, though?
Well, the youthful body is going to take years to build upon. He's going to have to mature in that area. But as a basketball player, there's probably never been a player this young play as well as he plays.
I know, Kenny, that what's attracted you to this guy is the fact that his favorite player is Vince Carter. He's modeled his game after half man, half amazing.
I tell you,
he's half boy, half amazing.
You know, I've seen the clips, Ernie, and you talk about. I call Vince Carter half man, half amazing. Call Kevin Garnett no limit. I'm gonna just dub him talent. That's all he is. He's talent. Uh-huh. End of story.
And there's no way the first time I watched it at my bar mitzvah that I got half of what they were saying, sure. Because like the first half was just like, what is this? What are they doing? How right. are they doing this?
I feel like if it happened now, you'd be like, is this like an AI sort of thing? But at the time you're like, they must have really done it. So we'll, if your permission, we may play some of the sound bites, but tell us a little bit about kind of how it begins, who's involved and what they're saying about you.
Yeah. So this is before we had Charles Barkley and Shaq. They were still, I don't know if they were still playing.
Shaq was thriving. Yeah.
Retired. When did Charles retire?
Charles had just been on the Rockets and was probably winding down. But
yeah. So it was George Karl, who I believe at the time was the coach of the Bucks. Kenny Smith, who was on the show full time, and then Peter Vesey, who is like a curmudgeonly, you know, journalist that used to always. He was like kind of like Skip Bayless before Skip Bayless, where. You know, he was the one that would like say controversial things about people and always be kind of negative. And so it starts out, you know, they're like, hey, 13-year-old Ben Kaplan is skipping everything. He's going to the NBA and then goes to Coach Carl. And he talks about like, yeah, we'd love to have him on the team. He'll fit in.
But really selling it, like doing like a very earnest, like, you know, assessment of how good you are as a basketball player.
Yeah, the buy-in from everybody is really amazing. Yeah. They really committed to the whole thing. And then they go to Kenny and he gives me the nickname Talent. And he's talking about how, yeah, this is all, yeah, he's great. You know, we've never seen anything like this. And then like, that's all fun and it's kind of cute. And then they cut to Peter Vesey. And then that's when it just like, it's crazy. Like, and then, so Peter Vesey, he says he's seen my rap sheet. He says, he like talks about me as a player, which totally unnecessary. He could have done the rap sheet thing, but yeah. Like he calls me, he's very unselfish. You know, he's got this great New York accent, very unselfish, doesn't share the ball. And,
selfish, I guess, right? Not unselfish.
Yeah. Unselfish. Yeah. Or very selfish. Yes. Very yeah. selfish. At the time that was so accurate. Of a description of me as a basketball player. I shot a lot in my defense. Like, I think those were the best shots that we were getting, but they were not good shots.
Hey, sometimes you got to be a volume guy. That's okay.
That's right.
Allen Iverson made a whole career of that.
Yeah. And so, like, one of the memories I have is, like, him saying that, and then the kid who was probably the next best player on the team being like, yeah, and like waving his fist.
Yeah, tell him, Peter. Tell him, Peter.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hilarious.
And then, yeah, he ends it by saying, I have three words for this kid, random drug testing. And it's like a very dramatic look at the camera. He delivers it. and I mean, that line, random drug testing, became like, if you said that to the people that were in my class at my school, like they would all still to this day be like, oh, amazing. Yeah, I remember that. That was wild.
Jeez.
And then there's a moment where Kenny Smith says something to him after that, right? Like, yeah, so as the video cuts away.
That's something that, like, I don't know, maybe my dad, I'm sure my dad watched it like 100 times before we aired it, but that was his favorite part. And he was like, hey, you got to watch this now that we're like at home and it's quiet. You got to see what Kenny does afterwards, because he says that, and then like the camera's pulling away as the halftime show's over, and Kenny looks at Peter Vesey and like incredulous, and he's just like, you're sick, man. And like that line was the one that became like the family favorite of just
amazing.
Like, you're sick, man.
Now, I guess you and your dad obviously are familiar with the halftime crew at this, but like, if people aren't as big as basketball fans, were the other kids at your bar mitzvah like, who are these men talking about you? Like, was what percentage of the people there understood what was happening? I don't like know how popular Inside the NBA was like at that moment in time.
That's a great question. I mean, I think like the idea of it, you kind of get. I don't know if you understand the like who this is and how just yeah. I just how like I'm sure there
and
were
people could
of,
tell it was like a SportsCentery type thing, like because I think those kind of shows were popular enough. Okay, so it wasn't complete confusion, but it's not like everyone was like Ernie Johnson.
right I'm sure yeah, it's not like there were girls at the bar mitzvah that were like oh wow, that was amazing, did that actually air on TNT, are you actually going to the NBA? I think it was
So I have to share a tidbit with you just in kind of a small world moment and also kind of along the theme of fathers and sons. So I'm a stand-up comedian in New York City, and a friend of mine is Joe Vesey, and Joseph Vesey's dad is Peter Vesey. So I've known this guy for like 10 years, and when your tweet was going around, I texted it to Joe because I didn't know if he had seen it. He had not seen it, and I want to share the exchange that I had. So I texted it to him. I said, I'm sure you may have already seen this, but this thread is incredible, and your dad is a dog for doing this. And then he goes, okay, that's amazing, unreal. I guess my comedy comes from my dad and not just my mom. Insane that they did that. I go, haha, they all fully committed. And then he goes, my dad doing the negative side of it is so on brand for him. So he had never seen that, and it created this moment where then he got to reach out to his dad and be like, dude, what is wrong with you?
That's really cool. That's yeah. really cool. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, it's been, I don't know if he like commented directly on it on Twitter, or if he said something kind of, and then like George Carl responded and Ernie responded. So to like have all those guys yeah. kind of like bring it back, was really like a really cool part of it beyond just the like a million touching messages. Like, that was one of the parts of the Twitter thread that I was most surprised by and like pleasantly surprised by is
yeah
just to have, I mean, I think there might have been like one negative comment in the like thousands of comments. Mm-hmm. And you know
what,
I don't make
do you remember that? What would the negative comment even be?
I think they delete it was something like I don't know, like must be fun to have tens of thousands of dollars to throw around as if we like commissioned it.
Oh, so just completely misreading the situation.
They thought it was yeah. like a My Super Sweet 16 sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And if anyone knew my dad, like if they were like, oh, we'll do this for whatever price, he would have been like, no.
Yeah.
I've got local sportscaster Chet Kopic who did this for free.
We're you got like Chip Carey to wish you mazel tov. But yeah, I think it's amazing that they did that, like just to be nice.
Yeah.
It's a cool thing where it's just like for them. Yeah. I wonder how much downtime they actually have. Like, is this something where, you know, especially for the format of the show as it exists now, where they do a bunch of stuff before the game, then they're like doing nothing for the entire half of basketball. So if they're just chilling there for an hour and a half and then someone says like, hey, do you want to spend 10 minutes to make a small family's life? And they'll be like, sure. Like, we'll make fun of a 13-year-old and half gas him up and half tear him down brutally if you're Peter.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was the message that was shared to my dad was like, we're just hanging out. Like, we really don't have much going on. It's like we're borderline watching this game sometimes. Like, this, you know, if it's early rounds, you know, they might not be super invested. So but yeah, to then say, oh, we have all this free time, we're going to do something really nice for someone, rather than we have all this free time, we're going to do nothing and you're going to like it,
right,
is what made it really special. Yeah.
So then if you can kind of explain how this all comes full circle in terms of you trying to kind of return the favor for your dad.
Yeah. So it was late in 2021. When we found out my dad was sick. So he was diagnosed with cancer. It was like a weird, you know, no primary origin, or they couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty advanced at the time. And he was like very sick very quickly. And luckily treatment kind of helped him along, but that was in the period of like around the holidays. And generally for holidays, I'll get family members books that I think they'll like. And so I got him a handful of books, and he looks at the books and he's just like, thanks, but I didn't know. Like, he's in a ton of pain. Chemo's like messing with his brain. He can't sit and read books. That's not something that he can do. So I felt pretty awful that I had tried to get him a gift and kind of made him feel worse. So I was like, all right, I got to figure out a gift that I can get him that would be meaningful, that he can actually like participate in. And I was like, well, the nicest thing he ever did for me was this halftime thing. Like, maybe I can pay it back. And so looked online. I think Ernie Johnson had just written a book, or he had written a book in the last few years, and there's still some website out there with a publicist. So kind of explained what was going on. And then Ernie emailed me back and said, like, hey, happy to help. Asked a few questions about my dad. And then said, yeah, we'll get something over. And then he filmed, it was just a video of him like sitting outside, said he had just been with his grandkids, and just like, as people who know Ernie Johnson from afar, like the nicest, most inspiring message. And then I was not going to be like, thanks for this incredible favor again, Ernie Johnson, can I ask you for more? But he volunteered, like, hey, give your dad my number if he ever wants to text me, because Ernie had been through cancer, and he's like happy to share my journey and things like that. So yeah, I think my dad used to always, he would take like goofy pictures from the chemo chair every once in a while. So I think he was sending those to Ernie every once in a while. And yeah, just an incredible like act of generosity from Ernie to then do it again. So
yeah,
I gave that to my dad on his birthday. We had like our whole family together, and he watched it, and it was super emotional, and he loved it. And it was great. It was a great moment. Another great moment, thanks to the generosity of a stranger. And then, you know, you briefly mentioned the podcast that I recorded with Ernie. So then it gets even more small world. But one of the people at the bar mitzvah was a family friend of mine going way back, named Meredith Shiner, who had since been a journalist. And she was doing this podcast series on Jews and sports. And she was like, I want to do the sports mitzvah. And like, the thing that inspires this is like remembering your halftime report at your bar mitzvah. Yeah. And she got connected to Ernie Johnson through this rabbi in Los Angeles who Ernie did something similarly nice for. And so she's telling him the story, like, oh, you know, we had this halftime report that you filmed for a bar mitzvah. And Ernie's like, well, yeah, we do those from time to time. And she's like, yeah. So I just remember Ben. And he's like, wait, Ben Kaplan, is that your friend? Cause he had just done the video for my dad. And it just, and she was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, the universe is just, bringing us all together. So she was like, all right, you're jumping on this podcast. This was before like I'd written a book or anything. I was like, I'm a nobody now too, but like there was no media profile at all. But she's like, you got to get on this podcast and talk with Ernie Johnson and with me about all this. And to see not only how much it meant to us, obviously, but how much it meant to him was really cool. Like, it, I think for him to know how much he impacted us impacted him, and it just created this virtuous cycle of impactness. Is really cool.
He seems like the loveliest guy in the world. And the thing that's so remarkable about it is that it would not surprise me if he does this all the time. And he mentions it a little bit on the podcast that he's like, yeah, I see this as my responsibility as someone who's, you know, gone through cancer treatments, that like, if I can be the person that supports somebody through this time, like, I want to do that. And I have a feeling that hopefully it's many, many years from now, but when Ernie is no longer with us, I guarantee you are going to see this outpouring of people being like, he did this for me, and he did this for my dad, and this for my mom. And like, he just seems like one of the like truly most pure, like good-hearted people ever.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you never want to like meet your heroes or people that you hear such good things about, but it seems like that's got to be the case. He's just incredible. The one, there were a few hesitations I had with sharing the story. Like, one is just, it's like a very personal family thing. I don't want to share it, especially like, I didn't want it to seem like I was sharing this personal moment to try to like drum up publicity for a book and profit off of it in any way. And, but the other thing was like, I don't want to all of a sudden make it seem like, hey, Ernie's open for business. And like, all of a sudden he gets bugged by a bunch of people, because, you know, you do one nice thing and
than you know what, though? Even if he did, I bet he would handle it graciously because he's Ernie Johnson.
Of course. Yeah, of course. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and the timing of it makes sense. Just as we're recording this on May 23rd, it's all up in the air of, is TNT going to keep the NBA broadcasting rights? Is it going to pass over to NBC for the B package? Is Inside the NBA going to exist anymore? Will next season be the last season? And there's all these question marks. So I think to hear, and I, you know, even before doing this recording, just like when I saw the tweet thread, I was like, it's nice to hear good, nice things about the Inside the NBA crew, just because I'm starting to get sentimental with it. Like, I will usually watch it if I'm watching the game, but like this particular playoffs, it has been like, stop everything I'm doing, not necessarily to watch the game, but like stop everything I'm doing to watch every second of Inside the NBA. I will even put up with these garbage Draymond Green episodes just because I need to get the guys in as much as I can before they're potentially gone forever. It's just such a wonderful show with some truly, you know, wonderful people, Ernie being the most wonderful, clearly.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting if, you know, if they don't find a home for them past this year, if Turner doesn't get the deal, which it sounds like they're not. Like what next year is going to look like if it is like truly the swan song and how that.
Oh my God. At least we do potentially get the farewell tour, because we've already been having throughout the playoffs, Charles Barkley making a million LinkedIn jokes and like the retirement home jokes and all these sorts of things. But if we get a full farewell tour season of Inside the NBA, like the dream situation would be we get the full farewell tour season and then something happens where the show continues. So we get like a full year of like Chuck and Shaq pulling out all the stops and everything. And then, oh, just kidding, the show's going to continue.
Yeah, it'd be like the good version of like when Albert Brooks throws himself a funeral when he's still alive and curbs enthusiasm. It's just like, tell everybody how you feel and then you get to keep doing it too.
But you know what? On that same note, I feel like you've kind of done that for Ernie. Like your tweet going as viral as it did has also inspired all these other people to be like, this guy's amazing and the best dude in the world. And he gets to see that and see how loved he is while he's around. And I think that's like a kind of beautiful thing.
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah.
Because if something like that could happen, it would pay back 10% of the gratitude that I have for him.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens with Inside the NBA. I volunteer Kenny Smith as tribute, but I don't know if that's going to be.
Here's the thing. And I was texting our friend about this. Me and Adam were in a group text with one of our buddies. I think like a low-key good aspect of Inside the NBA is that Kenny sucks so much that it allows the other guys to make fun of him, and it's really good because Chuck is at his best in the most, I think it was the most recent broadcast, there was this thing where like Kenny like decided like, Ernie, can I hard change the subject and go into 45-second soliloquy about how whoever wins the Western Conference Finals will have like the face of the league, and the whole thing goes uninterrupted, and then Charles goes, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Kenny, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
That was terrible. That was just a terrible thing. Yeah, God. So funny.
It is amazing. There was the thread, I can't remember. It was sometime, you know, COVID just presses time together, but someone said that, you know, like Charles Barkley is one of the top five funniest people out there, and that people just threaded clips from, I mean, it was, I spent like 2 hours going through all the clips, and it is amazing just how funny he is, especially when they don't have Draymond Green poochying it up.
Brutal. All right, Ben, I've got two final questions for you, and then we're going to let you go. First question is, you mentioned you have three sons. I don't know how old they are. I'm assuming they're fairly tiny. But if they do have bar mitzvahs of their own, how intimidating is it to know what you have to live up to? I mean, this is
the bar mitzvah is so high.
There you go. Now that's an episode title for you.
That is a great question. I don't think they're going to have bar mitzvahs. Okay. However, my sister's kids, two of them have gone through it, and her son had his bar mitzvah recently, and she did ask me, she's like, do you have any connections? Can you get anything? And I was like, I don't think so. But I did feel that pressure of like, what would my dad do here? Who can I talk to? Who can I call? but I was of no use.
Yeah, I mean, it's Cameo now, and unfortunately, that's pretty expensive. There are people who are like a relief pitcher for 1 year in 1987 who are like, I want $100 for a 15-second. You're like, who do you think you are?
Yeah. The funniest Cameo thing I've seen at a event like that is at a wedding, it was actually my wife's middle sister, her husband's like frat bros all got him bunch of cameos from people and they played them. This was kind of before that was a thing. But they had Chris Kattan and they told Chris Kattan that it was a Night at the Roxbury themed wedding. And he believed it and was like genuinely touched by it. And seeing that moment,
that actually makes me feel kind of bad.
Yeah, it was tough.
Like he got paid a couple $100. That's like true. True. You can't feel bad about anything you do.
Yeah, that's true. That's hilarious. So finally, before we let you go, we want to give you a chance to plug whatever you'd like and also tell us a little bit about the book that came out recently.
Yeah. So I, with one of my best friends from third grade, who was at that bar mitzvah and remembers that moment very well.
Amazing.
Danny Parkins, who's a Chicago radio host.
I know him. 670 The Score.
That's right. home of the Bulls and the Cubs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe other teams know too. We partnered to write a book on the surprising influence of former Division III basketball players in the NBA as coaches and general managers. So I played, despite the content in that video, my nickname was not Talent because I was not able to. Right. But I did keep playing and I did play at the Division III level and started noticing people like me that I, you know, played with, played against, coached me, going into the NBA and rising the ranks fairly quickly. So I was like, how widespread is this? When did this start? And that curiosity led me to discover that at the time, so this was in 2021. 12 of the 30 NBA teams had a former Division III player, either as head coach or general manager. So it's like, how did almost half the teams have someone like me now running the team? And so we dug into like how that happened, and that took us back to the very beginning of the league. And so we tried to write it in a way that, you know, if you're a very hardcore basketball fan, there's things in there that you would have never known because the people that wrote it are two very hardcore basketball fans. And we found a bunch of things that were shocking and people that we had no idea were so influential to like the Lakers being created or the creation of the dunk contest or things like that, all the way to, you know, names that NBA fans all know now, which is like the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, Chris Finch, the guy who runs the Boston Celtics, Brad Stevens, the Van Gundy brothers who are coaches and then announcers, and all these guys were part of the book. So,
and I saw that Jeff Van Gundy did the foreword for you guys, right?
He did, yes.
Whoa.
Another person who is incredibly kind and generous with their time. It was, we interviewed him and then Danny called to do a fact check because we talked to a bunch of people from his past. Got some great stories about him as a college player and like him as a young coach coaching high school and how he was with the kids. And
I just picture him bald at 18, even though I know that wasn't the case.
I mean, it is amazing. We have some good pictures on the in the middle of the book. He was not bald. And Stan, his brother, who's like, you know, I think he would refer to himself as somewhat portly or maybe in less generous terms, but he was like rail thin. And so pictures of him with like a big mustache and long hair.
That's amazing.
And Danny was practicing this pitch, like, you're the heart of the book. We put your chapter right in the middle. Mm-hmm. Like you represent everything that we want this project to be. Will you consider maybe writing the foreword? And he was like, yeah, sure. He's like, seriously, you'll do it? He's like, yeah, I wrote the foreword for Rick Pitino's book. He's like, yeah, but you know him. You've worked with him. He's a legend. Like we've talked a couple times on the phone and he went on my radio show once. But yeah, he was,
that's
incredible.
Awesome.
So he wrote a great
foreword. Cool. And then when did the book come out?
The book came out in mid-April.
Nice.
Okay. So very recent. Yeah. I would love it if his foreword halfway through in classic Van Gundy fashion just like went on a tangent about how flopping is ruining the NBA. Just for three paragraphs.
There were no diatribes, no like stand-up comedy bits in there. It was all very sincere.
No, I'm using this ESPN broadcast as a scratch the itch of a podcast that I wish I hosted.
It's true. He has been known to do that. Is there a preferred place that you would like people to purchase the book?
Or no, kinda anywhere.
Wherever? Okay.
Anywhere. No, I mean, as someone who likes indie bookstores, if you want to buy it through your favorite indie bookstore.
Or bookshop.org, which does a similar thing.
That is a fantastic resource. Those are all great, but anywhere is great. And if you do read it and like it, tell a friend, tell anyone. even if they're not a friend.
Tell an enemy. They might like
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
We'll love it. But even if you're not like the biggest NBA fan, I think there are, we've had some people say like, oh, this is such a great like management primer, or a way to think about like navigating a career and the importance of, you know, how to build a team and how to work with others. So we tried to layer some of that stuff in there too.
That's awesome. Finally, anywhere people can follow you, where would you like people to check your work
out? Yeah, well, I would say you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at bkaplan4. You did miss the best thing I'll ever tweet, but I hope that it would still be somewhat worthwhile.
Hey, you never know. You got a long life ahead of you. You might top this moment, but it'll be hard. It's a high bar you've set for yourself.
I don't think so.
But Ben, thank you again so much for the time and for sharing this this story. It was incredible.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, guys.
Of course.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Four Sources, hosted by Adam Abawala and Mike Schubert. Our editor is Kensei Suramaki. The website is by Kelly Schubert. The art is by Allison Wakeman. The music is by Bettina Campomanes. And the social media is by both of the Horse Boys.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Birds, Self Tortesta, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, How About Them, Normal Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry Doesn't Eat Subway, and I'm Tired of the Propaganda.
Ben, it's just not good food.
It's bad.
I get it in a pinch, but if you live in a city that does like other sandwiches, like why would you ever go to Subway over a bodega? I don't understand.
Going to Subway or Papa John's in New York City should be a punishable offense.
How? When there's like a Domino's in Italy, like what's happening?
It's upsetting. It's upsetting.
What's happening?
It's not okay. Hi, Trish, Nicole Shepard, Chase Underulo, Haley Zink, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby is a vampire, Chelsea's cousin, Ginger, Spurs boy, balls to the walls, and Artie Party, who apparently I'm going to meet some of these people. I'm very excited about that. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Horse Hoops and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops because...
Horse Hoops was actually run by Tim McMahon, who asks all the bad questions on the maps, and they found out it was his burner account.
Well, you know what? That'll happen sometimes. And frankly, the ban was necessary.
Well, he actually got banned from going to Mavs games for a while, I think.
That's hilarious.
And he tried to make his own nickname, Band McMahon, be a thing.
Oh,
and
boy.
Giving yourself your own nickname is never good.
No.
Never.
No. Go to our website, horsehoops.com, for nothing about Tim McMahon, but definitely some links to the legend, Bill Walton. May he rest in peace.
And if you want to support the Horse Boys, you can go to patreon.com/horsehoops. When the finals roll around, we'll start doing our finals video Zoom call recap things, and you can get access to bonus audio and writing and physical merchandise like the jerseys I just sent out to some folks. And you can also go to horsehoops.com/merch to get other merch like Stuff Nerds shirts and digital merch items. We'll close this episode out by saying something in the category, as we always do. Our teams are officially out of it, so we don't have to do that anymore. It didn't work last episode.
Yeah.
What do we want to do? I mean,
you know what we can do? I got three words for you, Mike.
Okay.
Random drug testing.
That is very good based on the interview. I like that. Random drug testing on three would be great. One, two, three.
Random drug testing. Clean it up, Ben.
So good.
Clean it
so
up and start passing the ball, all right?
You should get a custom jersey with random drug testing.
Oh my gosh, it's the new cash considerations.
Yeah. Well, it's like curving like it does with Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Just amazing. Very arcing to make all the letters fit.